702
for the curious
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Now, the leader of the economic freedom fighters, Julius Malema, admitted recently that the party is struggling to gain leverage with female voters. Malema was speaking to journalists during his visit to the party's stand at the RAND show at NASRAC on Tuesday. He said although the party had worked on some very progressive policy positions to attract the female vote, it was struggling to gain traction. He added that the party had even taken a 50% zebra approach in its deployment to parliament, which meant that the party had progressed towards gender parity. And the zebra approach is, of course, that for every man, there must be a woman. And of course, he also stated that the party was conducting their own internal research to assess their failure to attract the female vote. Now, before we get into the discussion on why the EFF and other political parties simply fail to attract female voters, let's quickly take a listen to the EFF leader, Mr. Julius Malema, speaking to ENCA's Sipamandle Gorke recently when he was in KZN on how this was a problem in KZN already, and this was way before he made the statement at the RAND Easter show.
In everything we are doing, we are prioritizing our women because we have realized that the message is not reaching women here in KZN. The only way to win this province is to win over the women. And we are trying everything in our power to ensure that we speak to African women's issues because they are the most marginalized people.
It appears as if we've had a little bit of a gremlin in our system. That clip didn't come out properly. We're going to give it a second shot so that you can listen to Mr. Malema. He was speaking with ENCA's Sipamandla Gorke, and he was speaking in KZN. This was before the RAND Easter show already, where he admitted that they are having problems in connecting with female voters. Let's listen to Mr. Malema.
In everything we are doing, we are prioritizing our women because we have realized that the message is not reaching women here in KZN.
That is where we will leave it. It seems as if our gremlins are remaining in our system. But let's get on with the conversation about the matter. We are joined on the line by the spokesperson for the Commission for Gender Equity, Mr. Jabu Baloyi. We will also be joined later on by an activist from a movement that looks specifically at this issue. Once we've got her on the line, I will introduce her to the conversation. But let's kick off with you, Mr. Baloyi. Good evening. Welcome to the program. Mr. Malema saying at the RAND Easter show that the EFF is simply not attracting women. They've done everything. He also spoke with a reporter in KZN recently saying if they don't win women in KZN, they can't win the province, and they're obviously interested in winning. What do you think puts women off from the EFF?
Good evening, Karim, and good evening to the listeners. The work that the Commission for Gender Equality does and other like-minded institutions to raise awareness, to make people to be aware of their rights and the scourge of gender-based violence, and to shy away from gender-based violence statements, stuff like those, it could be a consequence that, you know, the EFF is failing now. You remember there was a threat to female journalists, and you were one of those that, you know, we even said it very strongly that we condemn that to the Commission for Gender Equality. Mm. And women on the ground now are very much aware of the issues around them. And when people come out in a militant form and in a chauvinistic and a patriarchal manner, it has got its own ripple effect, and this could be the as a result of those things. We're not saying scientifically it has been proven, but we believe as a commission it's bearing now. The chicken are coming home to roost, because wherever you go, we talk out with the community stakeholders, and they understand that, you know, it's time that, you know, we, as men, ourselves, particularly as men, we start talking to them in a respectful way, in a manner of engaging, not to think about women as people who do not have the agents of their own, who couldn't reason, who just talk to them and give them directions and autocratic views, and they just keep quiet. Gone are those days, and that's what we're even teaching the young ones at universities, the young ones at the high school, to say, when you find a man behaving in this form of masculinity, the misogynistic way of doing things, stay away from such kind of people, because they do not respect you and they will never respect you.
Mm-hmm.
And the utterances that, and the bile that some of these people spew in the public domain, it's worrisome to the women. And women, if you could have seen the total shutdown, have rejuvenized and re-galvanized how women, and more especially young women, who are very, very well educated, who are very critical thinkers, have formed against us men to say, you will never talk to us like that, you will never disrespect us. And then you will see the formation of women forward movement. It's as a result of us men not respecting women, not communicating to women in the manner in which they were supposed. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't matter, Karima, when I come back to you after I've had you and I say, Karima, I apologize. Poli van Vega, I apologize. But, you know, all along, you know, I was steadfast in my thinking to say, look, this is what I am. This is what I believe. Me, Jabu Baloyi, I'll talk to you, Karima, the way I feel. And when I talk to you, CPS, I say, hey, you sit here. How are you, my friend? Let's talk. So women have, there's a school of thought to say they've had enough in the men and the talk, because they start with the talk. Next thing, it's led to violence. Next thing, it leads to killing. So women, they've stepped back, and that's the root cause that the EEFS must address within the rank and file, even where they go. They might talk the talk, political talk, but when it comes to women, women are both very sensitive. And when they see one ahead, remember there were instances where, Karima, where women will support us men when we've raped, when we have done something wrong, they will also follow us. But now, women of today, they will always say to us, Jabu, you cannot talk about us without us and think that, you know what we're thinking. It's about us. Respect us or nothing else.
Now, there is the information from the Electoral Commission that says 55% of women had registered to vote in this year's election. And of the 26 million registered voters, women make up the larger majority with 14.7 million registered voters against the 12 million male voters. So obviously the women's vote is important, not just for the EFF, but it's also important for all political parties. This toxic masculinity, of which you've been giving lots of examples for, that we've seen in political parties, but particularly in the EFF, its militaristic stance, it has a central commander-in-chief, it has a war council, it has a its entire framing is almost warlike. It's quite aggressive and it's quite patriarchal, and it's very masculine. In fact, in a very bad way. Is this one of the things that you think puts women off, particularly if one looks at the way in which gender-based violence manifests in South Africa, that women are at the receiving end of that toxic masculinity that is often displayed by a party like the EFF?
Yes, most definitely. If I were to advise them, the militant stance, particularly the war talk, even to the most vulnerable people of our society that we're supposed to protect and respect, it doesn't augur well for people on the ground losing the female voters and the voices. And it's not only to EFF, even to the ANC, without the necessary policy on sexual harassment and how they deal with issues, the grievances where women are involved, it could also be a factor that they need to look at as a matter of agency. You look at the DA also, there's a counselor from Ikurulene area, if I'm not mistaken, who also feels that, you know, the party doesn't have, as much as we call them as a Commission for Gender Equality, and look at all of these political parties, Karima, they don't have policies that are geared in developing that voice of a woman and empowering them. They're just running around the issues because they know, you know, you see the EFF, even in the Northwest, there was a case of harassment. Even in somewhere in Johannesburg, there was a case of harassment. The political parties also, they must sit down and introspect, not only the EFF.
Yes.
They must introspect about the role that they are playing in society to make sure that the women's voice is heard and also seen and it's not suppressed.
All right, because, Mr. Baloyi, I'm sorry to cut you in. We've just got our other guest that has finally come through. I just want to bring her into the conversation. Her name is Fatima Mutlwatsi. Fatima, good evening. Welcome to the program. Can you tell us which organization you are from? Which campaign are you running? And are you surprised by the fact that the EFF is struggling to gain leverage with female voters? And do you think this is particular only to the EFF?
Oh, wow. What a mouthful. But good evening, South Africa. My name is Giti Meti Fatima Tumotati. I am the chair and founder of Black Women Caucus. I'm currently the national coordinator for the Shai Fuba campaign, which is essentially asking for a feminist government.
Mm.
So it's quite interesting that we're having this conversation because I think it's a conversation that's been existing for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing new. It's just found center stage right now. But I think we're at a point, particularly your marginalized groups are at a point where they're realizing that our current political organizations do not have our best interests at heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite dangerous, right? Understanding that how big boy politics works, right?
Yeah.
That suddenly there's a hype in the feminist way, there's a hype in women's struggle, there's a hype on gender-based violence. And we see how political organizations have been very deliberate about trying to hijack that narrative.
Mm.
Right? If you look at how these political organizations work, they are exactly the opposite of what they preach and what they claim.
Mm.
So, I mean, if you look at the top four political organizations in the country, they all have really interesting positions when it comes to issues of women and other marginalized groups, including the LGBTQI community, people living with disabilities and children, and even migrant workers.
Mm.
However, how the organization runs in itself is very much anti-marginalized groups.
Yes.
I mean, it's really pathetic that an organization as big as the ANC, it took them over 100 years to come up with a policy on sexual harassment.
Mm.
And even the introduction of that policy was purely on the basis that they failed to contain their own internal contradictions, right? So I think it's important, and I think what's the biggest challenge that the political organizations find themselves in, right, that how do we contain the contradictions and the mess that happens and the violence and the toxic masculinity that happens in our organizations, given the fact that we've also got an increasingly more vocal women's group, right? So gone are the days where women are not participating politically or rather not voicing, you know, publicly. We are seeing women are now thinking about alternative forms of power.
Yes.
And this is why the Shai Fuba campaign also comes into effect.
Mm.
We are saying that power shouldn't only exist in political organizations. Inherently in South Africa, political organizations have always served the interests of men, in particular black men, because we also understand that the faith of politicians in this country still remains black men. As Shai Fuba, as this campaign, and not just Shai Fuba, but other organizing feminist spaces, we're coming to say that actually we can have alternative governance. We know what alternative governance looks like, right? And this is why these political parties will continue losing the women's vote.
Okay. All right. Fatima, let me just play you a clip. We tried earlier, but I'm glad you're back now. We had a gremlin in the system. But this is a clip of Mr. Malema speaking to one of ENCA's reporters in KwaZulu-Natal. Now, this weekend, when he visited the EFF stand at the Rand Easter show, he was admitting that the party was struggling to connect with women. But this is a clip from when he was in KwaZulu-Natal, when he realized that the majority of people in KwaZulu-Natal are women, and that in fact, if they're not connecting with women, they're going to lose the province. So let's just take a listen to Mr. Malema.
In everything we're doing, we're prioritizing our women, because we have realized that the message is not reaching women here in KZN. The only way to win this province is to win over the women. And we're trying everything in our power to ensure that we speak to African women's issues, because they are the most marginalized people.
That is, of course, Mr. Julius Malema. Now, as you've said, Fatima, political parties have tried to adapt their message to try and fit what they think is a typical box that they can tick and say, women done, feminism done, you know. But, I mean, if you are going to approach voters as fodder and not really put their issues on the agenda, even when it manifests in your own organization, like it did in the African National Congress, like it did in the Democratic Alliance, and so on, then you're going to have this continuous thing where political parties are going to say, we must connect with women, we will connect with women, because if we don't get the women, we won't get the vote. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they are standing for a women's empowerment or even a feminist agenda.
Of course. I mean, I think the biggest issue I've been battling with, right, and I'm almost tired of this position, but I guess we need to do the work of educating and learning and unlearning. There's a difference between having a segment of your manifesto that speaks to women's rights and having an entire manifesto that is cognizant of the position of women in this country. What I mean, for me, it's problematic that when you speak or when you go to any of these manifestos of the top five or the top four political organizations, how do you not gender education? How do you not gender labor? How do you not gender the economy? How do you not even gender the issue of land expropriation without compensation? All these very important pinnacle issues or national questions, as they like to call them, should be seen from a gendered lens. Political parties have, for the past 25 years, excluded women from the political discourse, right? And that's why 25 years later, they are seeing and they're sitting with this mess where they're struggling to appeal to the issues, or they're struggling to appeal to the woman vote. I mean, the reality of the matter is, if I go onto these manifestos, if I'm lucky, there's a page dedicated out of 700 or 150 pages of a manifesto. There's only one page dedicated to my own lived experience. What are you saying about my participation in the economy? What are you saying about my access to healthcare?
Absolutely.
Right? Those issues need to be gendered. And this is the big loophole that all political parties are missing, right? They're just pushing the issues of women and other marginalized groups into one little corner and saying, yes, we've ticked the box representation and that's enough. And that's what we're against. We're saying that if we are to represent us holistically, stop representing aspects of us. Because as it stands, all political parties, none of them really fully encompasses the lived experiences and realities of South African women and migrant women in this country.
Okay, Mr. Balo, let me bring you in here. The point that Fatima makes is very interesting, because essentially she's saying that what political parties are doing for expediency's sake is that they're ghettoizing women's issues and gender issues, putting it in a box and making as if life in general is not a gendered experience. I mean, we used to have a gendered look at the budget, for example, to see, you know, how municipalities and provinces, for example, are planning to make spaces safer for women. We looked at the way in which, you know, issues around land was discussed, because the majority of subsistence farmers on the continent, for example, are actually women farmers. So every aspect of life needs to be looked through a gendered lens. And the parties are obviously not doing that because, first of all, they haven't really struggled with the issues in their own organizations. And if they have, they have often been sacrificed at the altar of political expediency. If you were to give the EFF a hint of how to go about connecting with women, What is it that they ought to be doing, Mr. Baloyi?
You know, to start with, what they're saying now on the issue of land, the land, even the commission, the Canadian Commission for Gender Equality, it's supposed, well, Fatima is very right. It's supposed to be genderized. You talk about land, land for who? You know, you have got lots and lots of thousands of rural women who need access to women. Some of them, when they lose their husband, the land is taken from them because of these tribal laws that exist in tribal authorities, in tribal areas. And those people that are supposed to be waiting to assist them, we need women empowerment budgeting, gender-responsive budgeting when it comes to land. The women must be given the larger portion. They are going to farm the land because they're the ones who also produce. You capacitate them, you give them empowerment, you give them capital. You will see mushrooming of the farms. Because majority, when you go to rural areas, Fatima, now, as I can talk to you, tomorrow you go, it's men who want you to farm the land and produce and go to sell at the market. You make sure that, you know, you create areas where they sell those produce. The big companies, ShopRite, Pick and Pay, come and buy from them directly. And that's what, you know, land will be waiting for some. Because you give a person like myself land, what did I need to do with the land? I don't need the land to farm. It's a woman in the rural area where I'm coming from that is striving for land. There's no resources for them. And secondly, what I would advise them is that, you know, they must think about gender-responsive budgeting. You mustn't say there must be a department. I'm telling you, Karima, can do this, even within Treasury. There could be a unit, even the monitoring department. That will show that, you know, there's gender-responsive budgeting for every government entity and also creative, conducive space for private sector to thrive. That can make them win even these young ladies that they are saying they're not there within the. And also ensure that, you know, their programs geared into empowering women within all the racial divides that can endear them to the masses of the country, particularly women. As long as, you know, these things they're speaking in false tongues, it's about us men all the time, it's land. Land for whom? What about women? If we say we have got this program, what about, why are we leaving the voices of women all the time? And you will be shocked, Karim, I've got friends within all these political parties. The voices of women, when they want to raise their issues, they will say, let's park that, you know, it's not an issue now. We're looking at it. They are ticking the boxes, all these political parties.
All right, Fatima, I want to bring you in on the question of women leaders. I'm a very strong advocate of the fact that we do have agency, despite the fact that we live in a patriarchal system. It's the same like workers who have the capacity to take on the capitalist system, even though they are in that mode of production. The women that are in power, in parties, in societies, in communities, are they coming to the party around a fundamental change in gender relations, or are they liking the idea of being singled out one woman at a time, one black at a time, and amassing the power and the influence for themselves? What are the responsibilities, or is that just another way of dividing women and letting patriarchy off the hook?
I mean, you know, the question of representation is always a very complicated one, right? On the one end, there's something very important and empowering about seeing someone who looks more or less like you sitting in a position of power, right?
Yeah.
But on the other end, I always wonder, what does it mean for a woman to sit in a position that is inherently built on toxic masculinity, right? Mm. Does that space allow this woman to be the kind of woman that she needs to be in the sense of advancing gender rights, gender struggles, opening up the space for transformation and preaching gender equality and equity? I don't necessarily think so. Mm. And I think this is a trap that a lot of South African women in positions of power, particularly in political organizations, find themselves in, right? Mm. So what happens is that political parties and the men in political parties tend to always want to have a woman there, right?
Mm.
And just kind of shush us up and say, but at least we've got a woman represented in our top six, right? Why are you complaining? We're not so bad. But if you look at the medium and spaces in which this woman operates, the space is inherently patriarchal. The decision making is patriarchal. She could be sitting there but really have no say in terms of all the big issues and big decisions that need to be made. So for me, yes, I love representation. I think it's important, but I'm also a bigger fan of transforming governance processes. I think right now the governance of this country is very much patriarchal. It's just heteropatriarchal. You know, it doesn't appreciate alternative bodies. It doesn't appreciate those who are non-binary. And for me, that is a huge problem. That simply means that it doesn't matter the amount of women that you pump into positions of leadership, if the structure is still the same, if the structure still operates on the subjugation and subordination of women, particularly black working class and poor women, then there really is then your representation in those positions mean nothing. And I think the past 25 years have shown us that. I mean, we look at the ANC and the list that they've taken into parliament, we look at the EFF list, we look at the DA's list, it's beautiful. The gender representation, it's quite impressive, you know. It somewhat gives us the illusion that we're somewhat moving towards a gender equal society and equity, and we consider women's rights. But if you look at the praxis, it doesn't meet, there's a serious incongruency between what we see and what's really happening in reality. And I think that's something we need to caution ourselves with. And that is also a political stunt, it's a political tool. And we also need to look beyond that. I mean, I'm also the fan of saying, yes, representation is important, but I have nothing wrong with a man leading me in a particular position.
Yes, I mean, feminism isn't biology. I mean, it's an ideology. Exactly. Yep.
So if he's advancing a particular ideology that I'm in line with, I have no issue with
it.
Don't put a woman there and use her as an scapegoat, as a shush, as a keep quiet tool.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. And that's something that's been happening, particularly with these upcoming elections. We've seen how all political parties are riding on the GBV wave.
Mm.
Everyone is talking about GBV. Everybody's talking about the GBV as a crisis in this country, but they fail to address the GBV in their own political parties.
Mm.
And for me, that should be the big red flag to the rest of South Africa.
Absolutely. Fatma, just explain the campaign that you are involved in. It's the first time that I certainly have come across it. Who does it involve? How do you move it forward? And how do you engage with stakeholders and influential organizations to begin to hear what it is that you are saying? That we are essentially saying feminism is an ideology. We want it imbued in your political discourse. It's not something to put into a little box that you can tick and then you can kind of front it, you know, when you're speaking to a particular audience.
So Shine Through the Campaign has been officially up and running for about the past 3 months. I think we are just really a continuation of centuries and decades of women's organizing and feminist organizing that's been taking place. However, what's a bit different with Shai Tsuba is that Shai Tsuba is really much rooted in the working class poor woman, right?
Yes.
They are the ones who are centering, who hold the narrative, who hold the discourse, because we also understand that they're the most vulnerable women in society, including women living with disability, including those from marginalized groups. So essentially what the campaign seeks to do, we have one demand and one demand only. Our demand is that we demand a feminist government. We understand that a feminist government is not representation. A feminist government is policy, it's process, it's structure.
I couldn't have said it better, Fatima. We're running out of time. Thank you so very much. I think we've heard you. We will certainly have you back on the program. That was Fatima Mutluatsi. She is a gender activist and advocating for what she calls a feminist government. And she doesn't see the fact that feminism is biology. She says it's ideology, something that I agree with personally. We also want to say thank you to spokesperson for the Commission for Gender Equality, Mr. Jabu Baloyi, for joining us in that discussion.